Off the Ball, GAA.
Oh, well, it's important to put in some bit of experience along with the new boys, because, you know, they need a bit of direction. And, you know, it was a big night for a lot of them, for us, for the first time wearing the Kerry jersey in a competitive environment.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. Off the Ball, GAA.
Oh, well, it's important to put in some bit of experience along with the new boys, because, you know, they need a bit of direction. And, you know, it was a big night for a lot of them, for us, for the first time wearing the Kerry jersey in a competitive environment.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Derbies is a team of your clubs, right? So Sheffield Wednesday and Sheffield United. Mm. Blackburn and Burnley. Manchester Derby tomorrow.
Yeah.
You like a derby?
Love a derby. Yeah. Love a derby. I think the best derby I've probably played in is the Steel City derby, the Sheffield Wednesday against Sheffield United. Absolutely loved that. The Blackburn and Burnley one was a big one. Obviously, being brought up in Blackburn's academy, we were always told Burnley had a wants, Burnley had a big, big derby, and then going across to Burnley and then finding out that it was so many years since Burnley actually beat Blackburn in Ewood Park, being able to be part of the Burnley team that did that. Was great, but it just feels different. I mean, I've said this before, when Kevin Blackwell was the manager of Sheffield United, we were playing Wednesday on the Saturday, and we turned up, I know, a tongue twister, ain't it? We turned up on the Friday morning, and Kevin Blackwell called a meeting, and he came in with a pig spray-painted blue on his back. It was thrown at his front door. And he said, "This is what's going on, lads. This is what it means to the city." And we had to get a police escort to Bramall Lane and all that sort of stuff, but like on a Monday morning when you have a derby on a Saturday, it just feels different. It's brilliant. The police come into the training ground telling you to get there early and all that sort of stuff. It's, I love a derby. Couldn't get enough of them.
You like the hot and heavy games.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's all about, isn't it? When there's that pressure and it means that little bit more. I think that's when you puff your chest out and become a little bit of a peacock.
Does the name Keith Tracy flourish in a derby?
I don't know. You tell me.
Well, you've characterised him as a left footer.
That's spot on. That's just undeniable.
You could see it. The more aggressive the game, the more you liked it, despite your silky skills.
Yeah, because I always felt you could use aggression against people.
So if everyone's playing football, you don't like it as much?
No, I think it can be quite boring. I think you need to rattle people and try and shake them a bit. If it's a pure game of football.
You want the defender to commit to the challenge, don't you?
When it's a little bit wet or somebody's a little bit annoyed or they're trying to kick you, the faster they come into the tackle, the more you can use that against them. So I always liked when people were wound up and trying to kick me because it was easier to go past them then.
We're commenting here from, I've not verified this, but Davy Ryan tip. The goal you scored for Barnsley Chesterfield, did you lose the game 2-1? I know that's a hard thing to score, but anyway, he's saying you lost the game 2-1 and Owen Doyle got both goals for Chesterfield.
I remember Doyle are playing up front for Chesterfield. I can't remember an awful lot of the game, to be honest with you. I just remember scoring the goal and Danny Wilson shaking my hand and saying, "Well done," but really I knew deep down, I started to roll my eyes and that I didn't play well there at all. I think we lost because I remember a bit of a somber atmosphere in the dressing room after. But yeah, wasn't a great memory, that one.
Now, let me ask you this, right? The Manchester derby tomorrow. Like, what are your expectations of this, Keith? Because it's all over the shop, isn't it? In terms of what you could predict here. The last time this match happened, as I said at the start, there, Old Trafford, 6th of April last year. So not that long ago, but there's a lot of differences, right? So. Andre Onana was in goal for Man United. Rasmus Højlund was up front and Alejandro Garnacho started out wide. For Man City, there wasn't any Erling Haaland that day, but Kevin De Bruyne was the head of the midfield and Ilkay Gundogan was a bit deeper, and Mateo Kovacic, who's still at the club but has been injured for a long time, he was there too. So a lot of unrecognisable names. Ederson in goal and Jack Grealish came on, so kind of a different world in many ways. Victor Lindelof came on too. But that was an awful match, 0-0. And the most recent game at the Etihad was 3-0 to City earlier this season, which was very comfortable for the hosts. Is this impossible to predict, or can you actually envision exactly what's going to happen here at Old Trafford tomorrow?
In my mind, I think it goes one or two ways. I think Carrick gets a little bit of a bounce and a little bit of a tune out of this United team, and something a little bit strange happens and he gets some sort of result, or the blatantly obvious happens and City turn up and just swap Manchester United away. And to be honest, over the last couple of years when Manchester City have been so good, I've always come into these derbies thinking City could hammer these here. Very rarely happens. United always seem to put it up against them, and they might lose by the odd goal, but don't generally take a hammering. The fact that Manchester United are winless in the last four games, I think, means they need something here. The one thing, like, I'm trying to scratch the surface of the game, and you know, which way will United set up? How are City going to set up? I think we realise what City are going to try and do, what they always try and do. The one of the questions for the lads coming on in a bit is, like, what is Michael Carrick allowed to do here? I mean, he can't just reinvent the wheel. He's not being given the keys to the building, saying play any formation you like, do what you like, and at the start of next season the new manager will come in and he'll do whatever he likes. I think the powers that be from above will be dictating, thinking we've got X, Y, or Z in mind for the new season. We want to start streamlining the way he wants to play, so you're going to be in an exaggeration that if it's Southgate, we're going to start playing five at the back, you know, stuff like that. I'm not sure who they've got in mind, but I was listening to Gary Neville saying it can't be Carrick in the long term. I really don't think it can be. I think United have been down that road with Ollie, and while Ollie didn't do particularly badly, I think United need a name there. I don't think they need arms around the shoulders and everything's all right, lads, keep going. I think a lot of them need an old kick up the arse.
Did you say 2 days ago that you could see Carrick getting it permanently if it went well?
Well, if he gets a Champions League place, I think the United fans could be drawn into let's stick with him.
So you think that could happen, or you think it should happen?
I think it could happen, but I don't think it should happen. Okay. I actually agree with Gary Neville in the fact that I don't think Carrick should be in the mixer for the job, because it's an elite job. Same way Liam Rishini shouldn't have been in for the Chelsea job. I know he's got it, but he shouldn't have been in.
It's funny, really. I was going to bring him up, actually.
Is it fair, though, like Arteta shouldn't have been in for the Arsenal job?
Yeah, I get that. There's obviously a lack of top managers out there, but you know, any sort of Pep Guardiola disciple seems to be absolutely red hot at the minute. Enzo Maresca, Arteta, anybody else who falls under that umbrella. I don't know who if it's not, if I don't think it'll be Carrick, but people are saying Simeone and, you know, Gareth Southgate. I don't know which direction Manchester United want to go in, but when you look at what's been said about the club from people within the club, Rashford a couple of months ago said United can't commit to any direction. They keep flip-flopping about which way they're going. Luke Shaw came out at the start of last season saying it's a toxic environment, but it's not anymore. Don't worry, it's not toxic anymore. I think it is still toxic, and I think it's still all over the place. And I said this, that this will keep rumbling on at Manchester United for a long, long time. They scored an awful lot of goals, but they're the 14th best defensive team in the league. They concede an awful lot of goals. So out in possession, they're all over the shop.
They were poor in scoring goals last season. So it's something that Ruben Amorim improved upon. Feels like they couldn't do two things at once.
Yeah, but he's also spent 200 million at the top end of the pitch, so it has to got better with Mbeumo up
not
there.
Not necessarily, does
it? It's funny though, because it isn't like, I know the goals have gone up, but I know you'll know as well from watching it, it's not like even those games like the Burnley one where they had, like, there's a bit of a freakish element to that. They have like 30 shots, should win the game, but at no point were you thinking, oh, they'll score 5-6 here. It's like the quality of chance wasn't, it's kind of, they were so far down that they've kind of returned to the mean almost, but I wouldn't say that it's kind of like,
no, I'm not,
there was
saying
an attacking plan and evidence.
Sure, we'd be chatting about that, me and you, during the season when Amorim was there. It was like, well, it's improved on paper, but it doesn't look to the eye that it's any better. Like, I think the difference is the striker, like Rasmus Højlund, kind of just stopped shooting at the end of his time at United. He seemed to lose confidence. The one thing about Šeško is he'll have a pop, a goal. He doesn't look confident around the pitch, but he'll try and score a goal at least. So yeah, it's marginal, tiny marginal gains, like, to give the Ineos.
Yeah, but it never looked like it was joined up thinking to me. I mean, Šeško is a player who thrives on crosses into the box and having that bit of serves and something he can go after. Yet United's wingers don't go down the line and cross it. They come inside and try and play 1-2s and little penetrative balls. That's not highlighting Šeško's attributes.
Yeah.
So if you're going to play Šeško, tell your wingers to run down the line and cross it, or come in and whip it with the opposite foot. I don't think they highlight their strengths. I think they're a bunch of individuals that are thrown together and they're all trying to get a tune rather than, you know, a proper team formation. And hopefully that's something that Carrick can get together, you know, a bit of togetherness, because I think United severely lack that.
Yeah. He beat 4-2-3-1 at Middlesbrough. I'm talking about a club in the Championship. And the one consistency in his team was that one of the fullbacks were Baman and then the other fullback would talk in and do a back three off the ball.
Mm.
So similar. It's not too outrageously different. Like,
no,
it's like you say. What is he going to be allowed to do? What he wants to do, or is this going to be Michael Carrick on the touchline, but in brackets, Jason Wilcox?
Yeah, I would have thought so. I think the reason Carrick has got the job, the reason Rossini has got the job, is because they can be dictated to by higher powers. I mean, if somebody like a Xavi went in there, or an Ancelotti went in there, and you can imagine one of Jason Wilcox telling him what formation he needs to play. That just doesn't go down well. But with a Michael Carrick...
But like, if you take Xavi, right, and he's an odd example because he obviously comes from within, but like, if you go and you take over Barcelona, you're effectively dictated on what the formation you should play. You can't go in there and play 5-3 at the back or whatever. It's like, this is what we do. And like, whatever variation of 4-3-3, 4-2-3, whatever way you want to look at it, but it's like, this is how we play. And that's not, like, effectively non-negotiable. You can't do it. The same way with like Real Madrid or whatever. It might not be as blatant, but you couldn't go in there and play defensive low. You even have someone like Capello, who goes in there and is sort of successful, but it just jars with what they're doing. So it's like, well, you're gone. You're not doing what we want to do. Yeah. I don't know if it's the worst thing in the world. Like, I suppose we can, and I'd have as much skepticism regarding whether Jason Wilcox is the best man to be driving the ideological thing. But I don't think it's too mad to be like, certain clubs, we don't play that way in terms of like, we have it. This is what we broadly stick to. You have to stick to that way. Wait.
United restrict themselves so much in the market, and again, I don't know any of this for a matter of fact, but from the outside looking in, they want a British manager, they want a young manager, they want to still play the Manchester United way. What manager is going to come in and do all of those three things? Young British manager, you're talking Eddie Howe, Sean Dyche, there's probably one or two others still knocking around, but I think United need to come away from this. They've been at this line of thinking for ages. I reeled off the last couple of managers. Four of them were ex-players. None of them have set the world on fire. Yeah, the last interim, Darren Fletcher. The next interim, Michael Carrick. It's a massive, massive coincidence that the best person for this Manchester United job over the last 13 years since Alex Ferguson has left has been an ex-United player more often than not. Mental, isn't it?
Alan here on YouTube, sorry, did you want to say something there?
No, crack on.
Alan on YouTube asks a question. I think it's really interesting, actually, because on paper it sounds simplistic, but it's actually something I don't think we talk enough about, is the specific qualities of the individuals in that team. Not the system and not the manager, but the actual players can do. And Alan asks the question, do United have any player who can actually put a good cross in?
Yeah, well, I think every player is capable of crossing the ball.
But, well, I guess... maybe that's implied, but does it actually happen?
They can. Bruno can.
Bruno. I was
Diallo
thinking Bruno.
Can. Diallo did. I remember at that Spurs game where you're watching the cross and he puts it right on Wemo's head. It's just like, but it's, I just don't mind me guessing at it. Is it harder when you cut back in to cross than it is to go down the line and cross, say, with the foot that's closest to the end line?
It depends on the setup in the box. If you've got one target in the box, it's probably easier to... If I'm on the left wing, it's easier for me to cross with my left foot. If there's two or three targets in the box, I can check back onto my right foot, because it's like a shot come cross to the back stick then. Yeah. And you'd imagine if there's two or three, the third player coming around will be able to lock it in. So as long as I don't overhit the cross, there'll be three very good targets coming in. So as you're running with the ball, you sort of have to have a look and assess the situation and think, what should I do now? Should I come back in? Or if there's nobody in the box, which... at Manchester United will happen an awful lot, because Šeško's not expecting it. He'd be thinking, they're going to dance down the line, they'll come back, and Šeško's thinking, I'll stand here because it's going to recycle and come back out. A lot of it is on your eye. If it looks on your eye and you think, I can do that. But when I played for Blackburn on the wing in the Premier League under Sam Allardyce, the instructions I got was, how many times are you going to cross the ball in the first 45 minutes? And he would ask me exactly the same after the second 45 minutes. He wouldn't care the running stats on how many times I crossed the ball. Come back and be a body when we don't have a Keith. And Stephen Warnock would say, Keith, left shoulder, right shoulder. Very simple, very easy, simplistic, tough. And when I would cross it, I remember once I crossed the ball, one of the very rare games I started in the Premier League against Fulham. I whipped it across the box and Benny McCarthy was looking at me. Sam Allardyce had a go at Benny McCarthy, because he should be anticipating. Our whole game plan was get it wide, get it into the box. So Benny shouldn't have been looking at me. He should have been on his bike straight away. So a lot of it is off the cuff and how you see it. But I think when the tactics at United are to come back inside, recycle the ball, try and pick holes. I mean, I think one of the most dangerous balls in football, and I always told Pat's under 17s players this, the early ball in behind, not particularly across, the Kevin De Bruyne one. You know, when the back four is a little behind, you just think, I'll just whip it behind them. Because when players are running towards their own goal, so hard to defend. And if you're the striker running that way, put them under a bit of pressure, push them in the back without fouling them. There's every chance the ball's going to end up in the back of the net or a corner.
when you're crossing your left foot on the left side to the lone striker, are you doing that before taking on the full back? So that's a cross from much deeper, is it?
Yeah, but it depends how loose the right back is. If he's really tight, then maybe I'd come and show and go in behind. You know, it all depends on ifs and buts and maybes and where people are. But if he stands off me, I always try to do the opposite of what the right back wanted, first of all. If he stead off me, I turn and cross it straight away.
Yeah.
And then the next one, you think, I can't let him cross it, so he's going to get tight to me. I'll try and spin him behind. Next one, I'll come inside on my right foot. Next one, I'll try and run him. Constantly doing different things. But I was always, I say smart enough, it's very, very basic. If you run past the right back the first time, run past him the second time, the third time and the fourth, don't be thinking, oh, well, I need to come inside and try something different. If you get success, keep doing it. Every right back and left back in the world, the one thing they don't want is the wingers running at them. And it's a real bugbear of mine when a winger gets it, they see the right back and they think, oh, I'll come back out. The right back is just thinking, oh, thank God for that. Run at them.
It's really interesting.
It is.
It drives me kind of mad, and how many times it's that you, so you're going up, pull back, cross, and it never beats the first man.
Yeah.
It's always that kind of fairly low trajectory. And I appreciate it's a hard thing because you're probably, by having less room to actually get it up and down or to get it wherever you need to go, rather than if you're crossing from further out and closer to the sideline, where you're coming in, you're at the edge of the box often.
Yeah.
It must be very difficult to get it up and over and down in time to someone to get in. And it's
That's why a lot of them are under here. When you come inside and you think, oh, I hit the first man there, it's because you're thinking, the one thing you don't want to do is float this over the back and nobody can do anything with it. If you underhit it, the fella in the hole might miss kick it and it still makes its way across the box. So you see a lot of underhit crosses rather than overhit. But it's difficult. One thing that annoys me as well, and I know I say a lot of one things, but players that can't use both feet.
Yeah.
I mean, when I played for the reserves in Blackburn, it got shouted at me all the time, keep him on his right, keep him on his right, he's no right foot. And in the back of my head, I think nobody's ever going to shout that at me again. And I scored a goal for Sheffield United against Leicester with me right foot, and that sort of shout went away a bit. It was like, oh, just handle him as best you can. You can use both feet. But, you know, this is another one. And I said this to the wife during the week. I was watching the football. You know, when a ball is in the air, players now just let it bounce. They get it and they go, oh, bounce, and then they fight with it. That's like saying, I'm not technically good enough to take that ball down. If that happened in training, I'd laugh at somebody. So you're a professional footballer and you're afraid to take that ball out of the sky.
I thought you anticipated them competing for a header. You mean they have space to take it down?
Yeah, say somebody's volleyed the ball and the centre-half is looking at it. They won't control it. They let it bounce and then deal with it from there, and you're thinking, are you that technically poor? Mm-hmm. You can't take a ball out of the sky.
Mm.
It happens an awful lot more than you'd like to think.
Watch out for that,
There's plenty of comments coming in here, naturally. Lots of people have strong opinions. People are saying, like, oh, you're still talking about United. It's the fucking Manchester Derby. To be fair. Brian Slattery says, this is one comment I want to pick up on here. I don't think any new United manager makes a difference. This is the big thing, right? I think the whole culture of the club from top to bottom is the problem. Now, is that defeatist?
I don't know what culture means. Like, I genuinely don't.
Well, I guess a club that's like, so what would you say I know you don't know what the culture is, so you can't answer this question, but what is Arsenal?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's just going
like,
well, isn't it?
I feel like it's like
well.
Just success makes everyone look class. And like, I don't know what culture is. I don't know. But I agree. I agree with the premise. I don't know who'd come in and change things, and all of a sudden it's kind of gone in the opposite direction.
The biggest difference, did you see Saliba's interview after the Chelsea game?
No.
He was standing outside Stamford Bridge and he was, what did you think of that? And he said, look, we won the game, but you know, we're not happy. We could have done it more. We could have put it to bed. I don't think United players are like that. I think it's we're happy with win regardless of this. And Saliba,
I think that's so easy to say when you're winning loads of games.
You've got Bruno Fernandes coming out and going, the manager wants me, but
they lose games.
Exactly.
The number of times Bruno the number of games over the last few years where they've got a big win and it's like, no, this can't be just be. We have to make this normal. They all I don't know, maybe that's just saying stuff, but I don't think any of them are. I'd say a lot of them players are embarrassed. Mm. I'd say they're feeling deeply embarrassed because it's such a bad position to be in. It's like, because I'd say you're kind of powerless. You're like, what Godfrey's going to come in next? What's he going to ask us to do? It's like, I'm wasting my time here. This should be class, and it's like been useless. And I'd be terrified. I'm thinking, if you're there and it's like, right, what'll it be like 5-10 years? It's like, oh yeah, I'll be the ex-Man United player, and it's like, I'll be in this period. I'll remember for being this period when it was terrible.
Yeah. Has Bruno Fernandes totally wasted his time?
I'd say he's just got out with enough credit in the bank.
It's 6 years now this month.
You say, look, I don't know. I realise I'm harsh on Bruno Fernandes an awful lot. I like him as a player. But if he was to leave Manchester United tomorrow, who wants him out of the biggest clubs in the world?
Or he'll probably just go to Saudi and make a lot of money.
Exactly. Yeah. It goes to show you where he's at.
I don't know. Well, it depends on the money. Like, it's just maybe like clubs wouldn't pay him.
Yeah, you take him, but you might want to be the
take
star.
Him. Like, I think you take
most,
him.
I think most clubs would take him.
I don't think Arsenal would bother with him in terms of Arsenal's midfield. I don't think Liverpool would be particularly pushed. I don't think Bayern Munich would. I don't think Madrid would. I don't think Barcelona would. But he's one of the best players in the world, apparently.
He does do a lot, but
he does absolutely nothing on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, but he scores and assists. I guess that's the thing. But I know not all the time. I know he doesn't do it all the time, but he will.
I don't think he gives you enough on one side of the ball. He's a very, very, very talented player, but what he doesn't give you highlights, you know, it's just not enough for me. He's not an Mbappe where you think, oh, I let that other stuff go. It's not enough for me, especially when he's playing centre midfield.
Yeah, not to get to 2022 here, but Dermot Keenan makes a point. Colm, I had a conversation last night with a United buddy of mine who was adamant that United failed by letting Ralf Rangnick leave the club and not letting him go upstairs to be the director of football. He was supposed to stay longer than he did. Erling Haaland came in and it was all cut short. But I mean, look, Rangnick's great legacy is telling everyone that the club needs open heart surgery.
Yeah. But to be fair, when you look back, like I thrown these stats out the other day, $2 billion spent on players in the last 13 years since Alex Ferguson has left. So they've had, it's recruitment, the managers have been poor, the player recruitment has been poor, the on-pitch performances have been poor. It's been poor from head to toe. It's not just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the 11 that are playing. It's all through the club.
Owen Doyle's been in touch.
Doyle.
Oh, in fairness, I initiated the conversation. Did you score 2 goals for Chesterfield against Barnsley? Keith scored for Barnsley. And he says, yeah, rings a bell. I remember Keith warming up in that game.
Oh, Jesus. What's he going to say here?
he had been in better shape.
Yeah.
I've edited that.
I really can't remember, but which leads me to Levi is probably in some sort of state.
Yeah, obviously sends his love. admiration.
Obviously.
Do you think, not to do a live production meeting, do you think we should play this clip that's ready?
If you want. I don't, if you want. Like, yeah, I'd say you could deduce it. It's up to you. I don't. It makes it seem like it's something crazy.
It's not really. Maybe we don't need to play it.
You can fire away.
All right.
That's fine. But just the final word and everything, as if that's the oracle and everything, despite his obvious limitations in certain regards.
Sorry, what we're talking about here, Roy Keane's words on the overlap this week about the Michael Carrick situation.
Who he has a grudge with, clearly. At least with his spouse.
With his spouse, who 12 years ago or so commented about Roy Keane unfavourably on social media. And
was this when Carrick done an interview and he said, come on, give us be a bit more lively? Was that where this came off the back of, and Carrick's wife then came out in?
I think he was still playing anyway, because it was 12, 13 years ago.
I think they got battered in the Champions League, or they were quite flat in the Champions League, and Carrick done an interview, and then Keane reacted off the back of saying, that's lifeless, absolutely lifeless.
That's it.
And then I think Carrick's wife came out and defended her husband, as you would expect. But we all know Keane famously lets things go, very rarely lets things linger in the background.
Roy Keane is one of the most sensitive people out there. He is, like, for a guy who's you know, his reputation is no nonsense, and baby, what a baby. I mean, he's susceptible to it himself.
Apparently he didn't sign Robbie Savage, because Robbie Savage voicemail was what's up at the time.
That's hilarious though.
That is
great. So he's not having it, right? He's not having Johnny Evans, no experience.
Totally understand. Yeah, I think he's right with that one,
and he's angry with it. Let's roll the clip.
What has Johnny Evans done to be a coach at Man United, first team?
But Steve Holland is a serious coach, a serious operator.
Yeah. Just doesn't look like one of his mates coming in.
I think it's made his staff better for 4 months.
And what about the other two coaches he brought in?
I'm glad he's brought Steve Holland in, because the other two look like they're people who he's sort of relied upon. I'm glad he's brought Steve Holland in.
Right. What about the other two?
I've never seen the other two coach, right?
Okay.
I've never seen the other super coach.
Well, you're not.
I'm just asking a question. You?
No, but I know Steve Holland.
I'm asking a question.
I know Steve Holland. I don't know the. He's on the beach
2 weeks ago with Johnny Evans. Johnny Evans leaves Man United 4 or 5 weeks ago as a loans manager, and then Fletch gives him a job. Strangely enough, he gives him a job. Has 2 games. Fletch goes, and Carrick gives him a job. Great, isn't it? We should all go to Barbados for a week.
So what are you saying? You're victimised?
So if you're on about getting your coaching staff in, we're praising one of the staffs in his experience, and then we just let the other two go. Jonathan Woodgate and Johnny Evans. What has Johnny Evans done to be a coach at Man United first team? He left his job 4 weeks ago, a loans manager, and ironically comes back working with the first team. That's a big step up, isn't it?
It's a massive step up.
Thanks, Ian. But we go back to what we said earlier. So Steve Holland, so you think what United need at this moment in time? No, I'm asking you a question. Yeah. Just relax. Yeah.
Steve Holland.
I wish you were sitting here and you said he's brought 3 staff in and we've reeled the 3 staff off and said they're all brilliant. So we're thinking Steve Holland's the man now.
No, I didn't say that.
He's an experienced man.
I think Steve Holland's got a lot of experience. He's a good
coach. Steve McLaren was experienced. Mickey Feeney was experienced. These are all experienced guys over the last few years. The last few weeks, before Burnley and Brighton home, Fletch knows the club. He works at the academy. He knows the girl in the canteen. He rings Ferguson to ask him what socks he's going to wear in the morning. And how did the 2 games go?
They didn't go very well.
Exactly. Right.
But I'm happy he's brought Steve Holland in. I'll go back to my original point.
What about the other two? Yeah.
I don't know the other two.
Oh, exactly.
It's because you... It's coaches.
I don't know the two as coaches.
Exactly. Coach and one.
I can't speak to the two as coach. I've never seen him in my life.
Gary, I hear what you're saying.
Thank you.
No, but I hear what you're saying.
You're saying you don't know anything about Johnny Evans coaching.
No, I don't.
Because he's never coached. That's my point. But he's gone into Man United, you're going, oh, that's okay, because we've got Stevie Holland, a new guru.
I tell you what, he has a great platform there, right, doesn't he? Because no one's going to challenge him.
Exactly. It's just sycophancy. Like
the only one. The odd time Ian Wright would have a go back.
But I don't. What are we challenging him on there? I think he's right.
Do you?
Yeah. What has Woodgate done? What has Evans done to come in there?
Enough. The Johnny Evans point. It's fair enough, right? But at some point, you know, someone has to start somewhere, right? I question that. I'd be questioning Roy himself in a lot of this. Like, you know, clearly the guy's still bitter about what happened 20 years ago. Clearly, this is coming from a very personal place. This is as much about him as it is about United. I mean, let's be honest about that, right? He may be right, but it is at a cost. Like, there's a cost of his personal happiness, and everyone else has to put up with it too.
Well,
and I'm saying this is obviously a huge Roy Keane fan and all that, but sometimes I'm surprised he's not challenged more. To be honest.
I do think there's a little bit of personal stuff in there, but I don't think you can get away from Johnny Evans shouldn't be the coach of Manchester United right now. Especially
he's like third or fourth or fifth man on the bill.
He's just part of the coaching staff. It's
just because we know his name.
Steve Holland was assistant in England.
All right, then Jonathan Woodgate.
But Jonathan Woodgate had managed more recently than Roy Keane.
At Middlesbrough.
More recently than Roy Keane.
Did he set the world record? Did he win the championship?
Okay, at Middlesbrough. Roy managed Sunderland. Got them up. Did very well, actually, at the start.
Okay, but the only reason these lads are being thrown into the mixer to get these things is because they're ex-players. I know Woodgate didn't play for Manchester United, but generally, Fletcher's only there because he played for United. Carrick is only there because he played for United. And Evans is only there because he played for United.
And if Roy Keane had got the job, the only reason he would have got it is...
Yeah, but now we're going into legendary status there. Keane is an absolute legend. Is Johnny Evans a legend of Manchester United?
It's the same thing.
Well, look, Johnny Evans, there's an awful lot of... I wouldn't say kids at Manchester United. Lenny Yoro, Amad Diallo, Dorgu, Ugarte, all of these people that are young and think they need to improve. They need good coaches with them to work with them day in, day out. Tell you what we'll do. We'll get a novice in.
Is it not just a case like of, and it, what just seems simple to me is like up until whatever, 6 months ago, he was their teammate. So he just has a feel for all the personalities in the dressing room. It's not just a case there's a nice intermediary. It's like that guy'll, he'll be a kind of a pivot between things.
I have to agree with that completely.
I don't think it's a mad thing. Like, it's just...
Yeah, I completely see that. And also, like you said, I think your point is the most valid, in my opinion anyway, is that he's only one of the coaches. He's not going to determine everything. Now, okay, Roy's saying it's a symbol of the club, isn't it? That how could someone like that get that job? Yeah. It's a symbol. But to Arthur's point, it kind of doesn't make sense. Like, Johnny Evans will know the squad. He's experienced enough in that regard. And he's just going to help out, like.
So the best thing that Johnny Evans has going for him is he knows the players.
So how long, say we, I went and got the best young coach in the world and I brought him into Manchester United, how long do you think it would take him to get familiar with the players and what they need and what they need to improve?
But I suppose you're a only, month. But he only has like four or five months at all. So it's like, I just think it's a speeding up thing, that it's just like, this guy, he's going to be putting out the cones. Like, I don't think he's going to be, like, if we didn't know who he was, I know that's kind of impossible in this scenario, but like, no one's talking about Giroud. Who's your man, Binion? There's no mention of him because no one's ever heard of him.
Well, Matthew Brennan was straight on it there. It was a former Ireland under 21 international.
Yeah.
So we have that.
Do you remember what Keane said? It's just jobs for the boys.
Yeah.
It just seems like more jobs for the boys.
That would have been jobs for the boys too had he got it.
Yeah, no, but like, Keane has been a manager. He's done certain things. He's a legend at Manchester United. And I think United is screaming out for somebody to go and motivate that dressing room. I don't understand why they keep going down this road. I mean, the interims they looked at, Fletcher, Cardigoli. Really?
Yeah, I with you on that. I do.
Is nobody else better out there? And the only thing that people are saying, oh, they all know the dressing room. Imagine Johnny Evans having a word with Casemiro. What's Casemiro going to be thinking?
Johnny Evans had a good career.
A Brazilian international who's been at Real Madrid most of his career, comes at Manchester United, a player coming and saying, look, I need you to do this, I need you to do that. Casemiro will be looking at him thinking, you were my teammate there 6 months ago. What's going on here? So one, it's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing, because people probably calling Johnny Evans mate as he walks around, because there's still that nicey link. He's a teammate. I think it's probably more difficult than it is. It's a nice, it's a familiar face and all that, but
there's a note in here. Keith Friday is acting like Keith Tracy.
But it's still Keith.
It's Keith. I don't know where Keith Friday is. What about the repeat point here, that it still does not matter who the individual is? That it's that's all a red herring about the actual problem with the club.
Well, if it doesn't matter, then we're just writing off the season, if you know.
Writing off the future, isn't it?
Just wind up the club, like, burn it to the ground and just start again somewhere else. I do agree with you, though. I don't know who, like, you could give free rein and say, here, take whatever thing you want, go and get anyone you want as a manager, whatever thing, assemble whatever you want. Wouldn't have a clue.
That's what it's like, Avengers assemble.
Wouldn't have a breeze.
You know, to get all the old players in.
But, like, it's really, it is funny how, what's the word, like, temperamental all these things are. Like, it's like, same thing, like, 6 months ago, Arne Slot looks like a masterstroke. It's like, geez, they really went, identified the right guy. And now, I don't think it'll happen, but now, like, it's kind of so odd that it's conceivable you have Liverpool fans kind of wanting rid of the guy because this season's been so poor. So it's like, Jesus, like 6 months ago, everyone looks like a genius. It's like, and then all of a sudden things turn. So it can't be that flippant. Like, it can't, it must be, there must be a, he's not a worse manager now than he was 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Like, he's not gone regressed or whatever else. The circumstances have changed, but like, it can't be a bad decision now just because, well, I don't know.
I tell you what I think you've really hit on, actually, is that a lot of people are kind of accepting this. It's like, oh, Carrick is the ticket. It was like almost getting comfortable at the reality of the cycle of United. Mm. Or like, the manager will leave during the season and then the interim will come in and the interim will just be a guy associated with the club. That's kind of the way they do things.
Yeah, but there's no success. Ollie done relatively okay, but where's the success?
Who's the next interim after that? Where are we at?
5 years' time, Bruno.
Yeah, nailed on, isn't it?
Jeez.
Listen, there's loads happening. There's loads happening this weekend, right? So we'll get back to that, obviously. The Manchester Derby, we have the rugby with Quinny as well in terms of Champions Cup. It's an enormous weekend, particularly for Munster in that competition. And then in the GAA, the club finals are on Sunday. So there's a double header at Croke Park in the All-Ireland Senior Finals for both hurling and football. Hurling's first up, 1:30 throw-in, Ballygunner of Waterford against Lochray of Galway. And then at 4:20, Dingle of Kerry, of course, plays St. Bridges of Roscommon. In the football equipment. So I was looking at recent winners there last few years. It is interesting that it hasn't coincided a club winner with the eventual All-Ireland inter-county winner in quite a while. So in hurling, for example, by my maths here, the defending champions are Nafina. By my maths, the last time that a club won it and then that county went on to win the All-Ireland was all the way back in 2015. When Ballyhale Shamrocks won it and then Kilkenny won the All-Ireland. I don't know if that's a massive coincidence, if it's an interesting, this is a quite interesting tidbit, but the lack of joined up results is quite interesting. since then. So a Limerick club won it the next year, but it was 2 years, of course, the Limerick won their All-Ireland under John Kiely for the first time.
Yeah, I know the dynamics of both have shifted hugely. So like the both championships are different. So that final would have been on Paddy's Day still.
Absolutely. It's all acknowledged.
And everything was laid. Or the finals were still September, weren't they? The hurling finals.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
No, that doesn't make much
different
difference.
Different worlds. But it's just an interesting history, recent history to it, that it hasn't been joined up. But yeah, of course there are reasons for it. St. Thomas's of Galway 2 years ago.
But it is, it's interesting, like, it's interesting how difficult it is to keep on the road as long as a club like Ballygunner have.
Mm.
That I'd say they're almost desperate for this now. Desperate for it. I know, obviously, like, they already have won.
They won in 22 against Ballyhale,
but, like, they are... To win two is outside of Ballyhale is fairly rare in the hurling.
It's monster, isn't it?
In the hurling. It's very rare. Just, I don't know why. It's a very strange thing. Obviously, it's such a tough schedule. And you're saying, obviously, you have a good feel for Waterford. You saying there's no love. Ballyhale can get no love.
Well, it's purely from the in-laws here, Keith. No? So there's a story here in the Irish Examiner, which is very reflective of discussions I'd be having at Christmas time. Down in Waterford, a story by PJ Brown, the headline of which is ahead of that All-Ireland Senior Hurling Final between Ballygunner and Loughrea on Sunday at Croke Park. Ballygunner not bothered by lack of Daisha support. So the dynamic is different in Waterford. 12 consecutive county titles for Ballygunner in Waterford mean not everyone from the Daisha will be supporting Ballygunner in the senior hurling final against Loughrea. Not that it affects Pádraic Manny and his teammates. I'm not too bothered about it, really. Obviously, we have a strong community and a strong group there in Ballygunner, and ultimately, that's all that matters for us, is the people that we're hanging around with on a day-to-day basis. Bit of a civil war in Waterford. I do detect jealousy. Now, my family would be De La Salle people, but generally speaking, would you think that... once your county get to an All-Ireland, what's your actual county in the club sense get to an All-Ireland, you should support them? Or do you like the little bitter parish rivalry?
I think it stems out of jealousy. I think what you're saying is right, but I don't know. I think once you get to a certain point, you know, I think it's very reminiscent of Leinster and rugby. Like, they're just so strong that when they do lose, people sort of are quick to point out how strong they are. But I don't know. I like the little bits of needle in between people and little fractions here or there. So, yeah, I've no problem with it. I think it all adds to the game in the end.
And everyone tells you, like, they're so quick, I suppose, with their sales pitch of the club, that's like, oh, this is the pinnacle, you know. The club is the most important thing. I'm not denying it.
Some of the most famous inter-county players will say it, this time of the year when they win with the club, it's like, this is all that matters.
And even, did Daryl Kinney just say it or say it in beforehand on, did he say it on Wednesday about thing like whatever?
Correct. He said it about Irish Independent article last weekend that he was 2004 was such a huge year for O'Connor personally, even with so he lifts the All Ireland for Kerry as captain, isn't it, against Mayo?
Yeah, it would have been that September.
Mayo, and he said he would have swapped that with Angaeltacht winning, his club winning the All Ireland, but they lost the final. And that's how much it means, I suppose. And when you think about it, of course it does. Yeah, these are the people you see day to day.
So it's a strange thing to suggest people should park that.
Totally.
For probably a fierce rival, just because they're representing
you get caught up in swing of things inter-county season. Sure, all of these lads are best buddies and they know each other. And I would say that's the case for a lot of them, but not for everyone. It's like, a lot of these lads wouldn't know each other that well compared to their club teammates. It's kind of, I suppose, it's not quite the same, obviously, but like playing like for Blackburn and then playing for the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah.
Similarities to it. So there are big showdowns this weekend. Half one, hurling's up first, Ballygunner, Loughrea, and then 20-4, it's Dingle against St. Bridget's.
Should be class, by the way. Sorry, it should be class, by the way, the two games.
Really will be. Yeah. Dingle are playing some unbelievable football, and we have a Westmead colleague there who is 2 minutes down the road from Roscommon, who would prefer if Bridget's didn't win this fight.
Didn't exist.
There's the old, that's the old rivalry. Keith Tracy, great to have you.
Cheers.
It's gone straight out of shot.
Now, morning, Keith Friday, how are you?
Good morning, everybody, how are we?
We have loads to get through. If you don't mind, can you hang on for a bit of football talk? We're going to do the Manchester Derby.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah,
why not?
You've been naming your all-time Irish Premier League 11. Now, we can rattle through it and we can talk about it throughout the show, but this is off the back of Vinnie Perth destroying great legacy. Yeah. He once had there.
He was all over the place, wasn't he?
Oh, I don't know what he was up.
Throwing people everywhere he was.
Yeah. Yeah. Best of luck.
Do you want me formation?
Okay. I want your and philosophy.
4-5-1.
Yeah.
Are you in charge of this team?
I'm in charge of this team, yeah. I trump myself in as the coach.
Are you head coach?
Man, head coach. Mates now on your staff.
I don't know.
Yeah. Who's on your staff? Las Wallace, is it?
Whoever, anybody who's kicked the ball in the Republic of Ireland, get them all in.
Yeah.
Jobs for the boys. I've gone for Shea Given in goal. It was either toss-up between him or Paddy Bonner, given I was born in 1988.
So what's your criteria? Premier League? Or just your lifetime,
just
or what?
Best players. This is, I think, if
or like Johnny Giles, Liam Brady, or no?
Yeah, yeah. Best ever.
Jesus.
Ireland 11. Is that not the criteria?
That's just to do Premier League.
Well, these lads have played in the Premier League, haven't they?
Liam Brady hasn't.
Well, top flight.
I'm on about like the Premier League since 1992.
I know, I didn't get that bit at the text message.
Is it the Premier League? Sure, it wasn't called the Premier League. It's called the First Division. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, Jesus.
Do your thing.
Well, this is Ireland's best ever 11. If you were to pick Ireland's best players, I think this is the team you'd be fairly close to.
This is kind of exciting.
So, Shea Given in goal.
Yeah.
Dennis Irwin right back.
Yeah.
Richard Dunn, Paul McGrath, Steve Staunton left back. I've gone for a 5 in midfield. So, it's Roy Keane as the holder. Johnny Giles, Liam Brady just in front. Damien Duff on the left. Aidan McGeady on the right.
What's McGeady doing there?
Robbie Keane up front.
Well,
I was asking you this off air. Give me a right winger. Give me somebody.
Yeah, but I thought you were limited to just Premier League players.
We thought it was Premier League. You lunatic. That's why, like, sure, Vinnie Perth was. That's why he was naming John O'Shea centre mid. The whole thing about Premier League era, right? There isn't really a centre mid to play with Roy Keane. That's what makes it interesting. Oh, time.
Good team.
Yeah,
sensational side. It would give England's equivalent a run for its money.
I just thought Ireland's best ever 11. McGeady. Throw your best Ireland 11 together. That was what I took out of the question.
Listen, listen. What's the money ball line? I asked you to do 3 parts. How many did you do? 51. That's you. You've gone off and done your own tangent here, and I appreciate
great
it.
Team, Keith Friday, that's what he does. He's a maverick.
Could you get England's all-time 11 set up before the end of the show, and we'll see which one.
England's all-time 11. Ooh.
Ah, no, that's a better team.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it might be a better team.
No, what? The Ireland one?
I think Ireland would beat England. That's unbelievable.
No, will you stop?
That midfield is untouchable. Oh, it's untouchable.
Aid McGeady.
Don't mind Aid.
He's out on the right down step. He's the one luxury
give
player.
The ball centre mid.
Ashley Cole or Stuart Pearce there, they're terrified.